Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik, and in for Jessica Tai, it's Telly Hughes.
Well, hey, everybody. Hope your Christmas went great. We're kind of in this weird time warp where you lose track of what day it is and all that. Right? It's like December 23rd through January 1st or 2nd. I don't know what day it is, but I set an alarm clock just to make sure. But yes, I was pretty certain today was Monday.
Yeah, I'm glad that worked out for you. Yeah, and you were right.
Every once in a while, I am. I had a 1 in 7 chance of being right. So we're here hanging out till 3 o'clock today. Greg and Telly with you before Wisconsin's afternoon news and then Bucks basketball later tonight.
It's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Well, I heard Telly mention it, but a winter weather advisory for all of southeastern Wisconsin is expired. Was kind of following this throughout the morning, as it was one of our lead stories this morning. And originally, they extended it to 6 o'clock tonight, this winter weather advisory for southeastern Wisconsin. They had winter storm warnings for more central Wisconsin, even as far north, or as far south, I should say, as Fond du Lac and Sheboygan counties. Well, those all expired, and the winds are still kicking up, but the wind advisory is expired, which begs the question, what prompts a wind advisory to expire? Because it's pretty darn windy outside, and gusts are expected to be anywhere from 30 to 45 miles an hour. But one of those sort of awkward snowfalls where you don't feel like a plow is going to do any good, but any kind of snow that blows out of the lane you're driving in is likely going to blow back into that lane before too long. Like it just slick enough to try and drive around?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best way to describe it, because you don't feel like there's a need for salt trucks, but there is blowing snow around. And so if you do plow certain areas of the road, then eventually that snow is going to cover it right back up, because the wind is going to continue to blow from the wherever you are, the land, to wherever the street is. So yeah, it's a lot going on. I'd much rather just not have the wind, just go ahead and plow and keep it moving.
I looked like Siberia in my subdivision when I was leaving this morning, man. It was ripping around pretty good. So likely to hang out throughout the course of the day, but all warnings and advisories, at least to this point, are expired.
Yeah. Number two, President Trump says major progress is being made to end the war between Russia and the Ukraine. The president meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky at Mar-a-Lago, stating that around 95% of Ukraine's security guarantee needs have been addressed. White House reporter Willie James Inman is in West Palm Beach, Florida, with the details.
President Putin previously demanded Ukraine give up the Donbas region, the country's industrial heartland, something Zelensky had refused.
That's an issue they have to iron out. But I think it's moving in the right direction.
The two leaders also discussed an economic prosperity plan that extends to 2040 and includes investment opportunities and funding for rebuilding in Ukraine. And this just seems like, how many more meetings do you have to have in order for everyone to just agree on one thing? Clearly, in my opinion, it seems like President Zelensky isn't all the way on board with everything that President Putin is trying to put out there. And here it is, President Trump trying to bring these two together and meet them midway. But I don't know. It just seems like there's so many concessions that Ukraine will have to make in order for this deal to become a reality.
And then you end up in this world of false assurances, right? Yeah, we promised to stop doing anything to attack the other side, right?
And then as soon as you turn your back,
more drone strikes or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and all this is happening amid several drone strikes. So the fighting and the war, it certainly continues. You can look at the war in Gaza as well. It's a similar situation.
Yep.
Looked like things were maybe taking a turn for the better, and then, no, more Israeli attacks. So it's been a revolving storyline here. So trying to get this right I think is certainly most important. How many ever meetings it takes?
Yeah, just end
please,
it.
Please try and end the killing and fighting.
Yes.
And number three, no matter what happens the final week of the regular season, the Packers are locked in as a number 7 seed in the NFC playoff picture. Green Bay will face Chicago or Philadelphia during the opening round of the playoffs. That is for sure. What day that game is played, still uncertain. It'll be either the 10th, 11th, or 12th of January. As for Sunday's regular season finale against the Vikings, playoff seeding can't be improved, and the Packers' injury report is long. So what do you do here, right? You rest your starters, right? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe. Consider this. The Packers have lost three straight games. If Jordan Love sits, he'll enter the playoffs not having taken a snap in nearly a month. Last season, the Packers were locked into their playoff seeding, entering that final game against Chicago. They played some starters, including Christian Watson, who tore his ACL. So Matt LaFleur has seen both sides of this thing.
I think you're always leaning on past experiences, and certainly it was a tough lesson a year ago in regards to what we lost going into the wild card round. But yeah, absolutely, you lean into those, and then kind of the state of the team as well. So I think there's a lot of variables that get thrown into play. I know a lot of people have difference of opinions on what is the best route, and ultimately we got to make what the best decision is for us.
Sunday's game in Minnesota is a noon kickoff. Much more on the Packers later today. Oh, by the way, they just gave up another touchdown on the ground to Derrick Henry.
It does not stop.
Nightmares watching that guy ramble through the defense.
But going back to it, I know we're going to get into it a little more, Greg, but I don't think this is such a bad thing that Jordan Love gets another week to sit out, especially after that vicious, very violent hit that he took to get concussed. I think it's another week to get him fully back right, and if he was just healthy the entire time, this is a long season, and he wouldn't have had this time to possibly get rejuvenated for the playoffs. So, I mean, you never want to see your franchise quarterback suffer a concussion, but the silver lining is he got 3 weeks to a month, like you said, of rest where he can get back to hopefully where he was when training camp was in.
Josh Jacobs not going to play, I'll tell you that much. There's no way he takes the field against Minnesota. That's going to be the Emmanuel Wilson show, but that'll be a big storyline throughout the week here in Green Bay. Coming up next, we look ahead to some of the big stories that could see further traction in 2026, including potential future development of the parking lots at American Family Field. We'll go through some of the details and the results of a recent bit of work done on that project with Ryan Amundson of the MMAC. We'll do it after this. Time for our weekly business spotlight with the MMAC. Today, we welcome in Ryan Amundson, fresh off a nice holiday and leading into another one. Hey, Ryan.
How are you?
Good. Well, thank you for joining us here, talking about recapping 2025 and looking ahead to 2026. You know, one of the stories that I think will get a little more traction here throughout the course of 2026 point to the potential future development of the parking lots at American Family Field and just how much of that parking lot gets taken over. How many parking spots are left? What does tailgating look like? There's a lot of ideas and scenarios after findings from a new report. This is all part of the financing deal that went through last year. This is something that had to be done, winterizing the ballpark and so on. But this was part of it, potential future development. What are the options here and what's logical?
Yeah, we're starting to get a lot more clarity here. And at the end of 2025, the report shows three different options, like you mentioned, all of them south of I-94. Two of the three focus east of the stadium, so around where the highway is and where the river is. The first would really be a mixed-use proposal, I guess, with housing, a hotel, some retail in one area. The other, you'd have the highway separating housing and a hotel from more entertainment and baseball-focused activity west of the highway. And then a third would be more toward Health Air Field. So, yeah, three different options coming into focus a little bit more, and I think 2026 will provide more answers for you.
Ryan, as a fan and someone that would love to see that area being built up, it just seems like when you start to get more traction on it, there's more talk, more meetings. Does this seem like this may happen sooner than later?
I can't speculate on the timing of it. It's all going to be up to the Brewers to make those decisions if they move forward with any proposal. I would think Where there's smoke, there's fire, for sure.
Yeah.
And so I think they're really serious about doing this. It's a small market team. You got to generate revenue any way you can, especially here in Milwaukee.
I feel like initially there was some pushback to the idea, and this was just part of the financing plan. But I think as it's come together, it certainly, you start to see renderings, you start to see that area and space come to life. You get to see that, you know, tailgating could still happen in some areas, or try and preserve a good portion of the parking lot. So it's kind of like having the best of both worlds. I see in some of these scenarios, right, where they don't want to take over every square inch of the parking lot. They can't.
Absolutely.
Given where the park is located.
Yeah. And tailgating is such a unique quality to Milwaukee, and we've kind of built our identity around it before game day. You're losing about a quarter of the parking spots there, but I'm trying to think how often that parking lot is filled to capacity during those 81 home games a year anyway. I still feel like there's plenty of spots. They are looking at some parking structures to make up for some of those spots. Well, obviously, you can't tailgate in a parking structure, but you have that option too.
Ryan, the latest survey released December 5th found sentiment improved slightly from November, but remained 28 percentage points below December 2024 levels. I'm talking about high prices. Are they here to stay?
Let's hope not, but yes. Once prices go up, it's hard for them to come down too. Mm-hmm. There's some other factors at work here too. I think there's some residual effects from COVID. Tariffs are playing a part in prices being high. Immigration policy might play a factor as well. Those prices are high. People are not happy, and they may show up at the ballot box in November and make a decision based on their pocketbook.
Well, it certainly did. That was kind of a driving force behind Donald Trump's reelection. He pointed to the economy. And it is kind of an interesting dynamic because the stock market's not having a great day today, but still at record highs. Mm-hmm. People are spending, but consumer sentiment is near an all-time low.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of strange to watch that dynamic play out. It's like people aren't happy where things are, but they're still spending money and the market still is robust. But you mentioned it, 2026, especially here in the state of Wisconsin, you're talking about a governor race that appears to be fairly wide open. You've got 9 candidates on the Democratic side that have their name officially in the mix and a couple on the Republican side. So it appears to be a pretty wide open race, but that'll be an interesting topic. And to watch that play out in 2026, I think will be fascinating.
Yeah, the shoe's on the other foot a little bit here in 2026. The Republicans are in power, and that wasn't the case in 2024. Affordability is still an issue. I go to the grocery store. I have a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old boy, so I really notice how much I'm paying. And those prices have increased over the years. For sure.
Yeah. And also, what does the job market look like in this upcoming year in 2026? I know it's just been up and down. I know with the government being shut down for a period, there was no way that the unemployment report was released and it was delayed and all of that. So what are we looking at in 2026?
I feel like we're in a little bit of a holding pattern here again. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. Wall Street Journal had a story today about what that employment picture is going to look like. The Yale School of Management actually did a survey of a number of CEOs. Two-thirds of them said they're not going to be hiring this year. They're either going to be getting rid of people or staying at the levels they're at now. What are the factors in that? Again, COVID, residual effects of COVID. People, companies feel like they overhired during that time period. So attrition is one of the ways they're seeing people leave. Keeping their numbers in check. Another issue too is artificial intelligence and how many of these jobs are going to be taken by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, always big sectors here in industries that do well. Healthcare, construction, they typically do well in this area. That appears to be a strong sector or sectors moving forward here next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have an aging population, so healthcare is always going to need more people. And then the construction, even especially around here with all of these data center projects going up, Construction people are needed in the construction market right now.
Ryan Amundson, the Senior Director of Communications for the MMAC, joining us here. Tim Sheehy will be back next week. Always good to catch up, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. Ryan Amundson joining us here in Wisconsin's Midday News. It's 1225. Wisconsin's Midday News podcast is built by Siding Unlimited. Truly siding and a whole lot more. Check them out online at sidingunlimited.com. Well, New Year's festivities will be cranking up all across the world here this week, including the city of New Orleans, where partygoers will see some new faces in the crowd as they celebrate New Year's. Remember, it was a year ago, January 1st, 2025, the early morning hours, New Year's celebration gone horribly wrong when a 42-year-old U.S. citizen and Army veteran from Houston, Texas, rambled his rented F-150 through a three-block stretch of the French Quarter, killing 14. That man, Shamsuddin Jabbar, was also killed in a shootout with police. It was an act of terror that police and local authorities are working desperately to avoid this year. We welcome at ABC's Jim Ryan. Jim, we spoke at length with you about that situation. I know the city did a lot to, you know, try and prevent vehicles from going in areas of the French Quarter they shouldn't. Beyond that, what measures are being taken this year?
Well, yes, and you're seeing more personnel there, more police officers in New Orleans, and 350 National Guard troops called in by Governor Jeff Landry and welcomed there by New Orleans Mayor-elect Helena Moreno. This, I think, in leading up to this, is seen as sort of a political flexing of muscle by First President Trump and then governors, Republican governors in communities that are run by Democrats. But in this case, Democratic New Orleans Mayor Helena Moreno is welcoming this. She says that it's that the coordination between the National Guard and these local police officers should help to ensure the safety of people who are in New Orleans for New Year's.
You know, I think it's an interesting point because President Trump has ordered the National Guard in a number of communities around the country. And I think that New Orleans was on that short list at a time. But this is being called upon by the leadership in the state of Louisiana, in the city of New Orleans, and not the president.
Yes. Well, certainly he supports it. But it's the governor who runs the show for National Guard troops. It's paid for by the federal government. But the governor is the one who makes deployments like this one. And yes, it has been seen as kind of a political move previously this year when troops are going into Chicago or New Orleans or National Guard soldiers over into Los Angeles, cities that are run by Democrats. And that may have been how this started. But in the end, the mayor there says, yeah, it's great. Bring it on. Let's get some coordination going so that not only do we have actual safety and security around New Orleans, but a perception of safety and security. Because a community that depends upon tourism as heavily as New Orleans does needs people to feel good about being there.
You know, political or not, we spoke with some people out in Washington, D.C. as National Guard troops were parading around that city. And they said, by and large, political or not, it's worked. And that perception led to a dip in crime. So certainly some data has been collected here that the folks in New Orleans are hoping applies to their city.
Well, right. The police chief there says that the crime rate in New Orleans has been falling anyway, that this year homicides and other violent crimes, property crimes are down as well. And so if this goes farther to continue that trend, so be it. This is a long deployment, Greg. They'll be here in New Orleans for not only New Orleans for New Year's, but also for the All-State Sugar Bowl and then for Mardi Gras. So this deployment will last almost 2 months.
That is significant, right? I mean, New Orleans is one of those cities beyond a convention city. Well, you hit the end of the year going into the new year and the Mardi Gras, it's like one major event rolls right into the other. And you're talking about so many out-of-staters here, Jim. I can't imagine how many people are actually from New Orleans proper celebrating those three major events. Maybe more so Mardi Gras, but still, that is an all-comers sort of event.
It is, yeah. Thousands, hundreds of thousands. In fact, Mardi Gras generally attracts about 1 million people to a community that's about 500,000. So you're seeing a tripling of the population of New Orleans during that short period of time. It's several weeks. People think of Mardi Gras as just one day, Fat Tuesday, but it's a series of parades and celebrations, many of them out in the neighborhoods leading up to Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. So it's a long-lasting and well-attended event, despite this perception that some people have that it's not safe.
We've seen some protests and pushback, Jim, at other communities where the National Guard has been deployed, again, from the president and not from local officials. Any pushback on the deployment of National Guard troops to the city of New Orleans?
Well, yes, some. But, I mean, we've seen in the last few weeks the National Guard was in the city with ICE agents conducting what they were calling Catahoula Crunch, you know, this immigration sweep that more than 300 people were taken into custody and presumably set up for deportation. But, yeah, we're not seeing the same sort of protests against this deployment, I think, because people who live in New Orleans know that it's important to have people feel good about visiting the place as tourists. And so if this is one way to do it, then they're going to support it.
You know, I guess I look at it from the standpoint, if I'm a tourist and I see that this is in place, I might be more likely to go than if there wasn't a comprehensive security plan in place. And I know critics have argued that National Guard deployment is unwarranted. It could cause fear in the community. But this is based around several major events. I think having that level of security may go a long way in attracting tourists.
Well, that's true. Yeah, and I've heard from some tourists who say that this is a good thing, that they welcome and they feel safer knowing that there are uniformed and armed National Guard troops marching down Bourbon Street, for example, and some locals who are a little leery about it and wishing that they were maybe a little more discreet. Because in some communities, I think in New Mexico, you've had a deployment, I think it was Albuquerque, a similar deployment of New Mexico National Guard troops. The orders were clear. Don't wear camouflage, just wear, I think they wore khakis and golf shirts. Then they were not armed. And they were doing the same sorts of things that these National Guard troops will be doing here in New Orleans. And that is having a presence there, making themselves known so that people do feel safe.
Jim, do you know, is the deployment fixed? You mentioned it's going to continue through Mardi Gras. Is there any thought it would continue on beyond these major events?
No, it's not going to be an open-ended kind of thing. But, I mean, you're right. Mardi Gras, that's a big deal. Very often the Super Bowl is played in New Orleans. You've got, the New Year celebrations. And so, yeah, I mean, people are partying in New Orleans, whether it's Fat Tuesday or New Year's Eve or the middle of June. It doesn't matter. New Orleans is a party city.
It remains as it always has been, right? Tourists clutching their cocktails, teetering down the streets, the uneven sidewalks and whatnot, shoeshine guy making bad jokes. You've got the piping hot beignets. New Orleans still is, in my mind, that
kids
party
playing
city.
Drums on, bucket drums out there on the street.
Right, all that kind of stuff. That's still going to be happening in a New Year's celebration set to get underway here this week. The celebration always is on in New Orleans. Always good to check in with ABC's Jim Ryan. Jim, we appreciate it. We'll check in again soon.
Thanks, Greg.
Well, they were the stories that everybody was talking about in 2025. ABC, our news partners, have dipped back into the biggest stories of the year in a year in review. Look back. Among the biggest stories to hit actually began in January.
Running from fire, entire neighborhoods and lives lost. Winter turned to summer in Southern California in 2025. Only 7 days into the new year, what is normally Southern California's rainy season erupted into fire. Incredible 90-mile-per-hour Santa Ana winds and a lack of rain fueled a firestorm.
I think the whole town is going to go.
Two of the most destructive fires broke out nearly simultaneously in different areas of Southern California. They would tax resources. The Palisades Fire near Malibu and the Eaton Fire near the community of Altadena.
Our hearts are breaking for you. And we stand with you.
The angry flames went racing through heavily populated areas. Residents struggled to get out. Some could not. At least 31 people died in the flames. Over 16,000 buildings were wiped out.
I've never seen anything like that. It was engulfed in flames. It was so much scary.
Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
So the 29-year-old accused of starting the fires actually pled not guilty in a Los Angeles courtroom. If you remember, he was apprehended. Jonathan Rindernecht, he was apprehended in Florida. Yeah. So he had somehow gotten across the country, the entire country. Of course, it takes a while to figure these sorts of things out with surveillance and whatnot. But this has been a story, and it continues to be a story, especially for those living in that part of the country. So we've had monthly check-ins with Caitlin Morrell. If you recall that name, she worked at Channel 4 years ago as a traffic reporter on television, and then ultimately she and her family moved out to California. Her home is standing. It was not leveled. It was not knocked down. But she is yet to resume activity in her home. They are still living in Airbnbs and in multiple different leases. A lease expires, they have to start another one. she does believe they'll get back at some point, but some of the main issues have been with the runaround with insurance.
We finally got to the point where we filed a complaint with the California Department of Insurance. And I received a letter from Department of Insurance confirming that they were reviewing my request for assistance probably 10 minutes before the story broke that LA County was investigating State Farm. My hope is that it maybe makes State Farm take notice that they can't get away with some of the things they're doing. To recap a little bit, some of the things that we complained about, as you mentioned, there's kind of been a new adjuster about every other time we've spoken. We are on our fifth adjuster in 10 months. They are supposed to, if you have more than three adjusters within a six-month time period, and I had four of those within a six-month time period, they're supposed to give you access to a certain tiered supervisor or like a singular point of contact that you can reference the entire time until your claim is closed. We never received that. We are someone who received lowball offers. Basically, it is a legal obligation of the insurance company to pay what my chosen remediation company is quoting, if it's reasonable. You know, you can't, obviously, if it's twice as much as what they think it is, that's a little different, but we have not even been able to recoup less than the amount that we're trying to come to terms on is less than what I pay for my annual premium, if we're talking about like a reasonable amount. And they're not doing that. We have our latest draft estimate has been under review by State Farm for 6 weeks.
So State Farm is being taken to task here and being investigated by the folks in California. They're starting to dive into this, but just think about it. Put yourself in Caitlin's shoes. Your home is affected by fire. It's still standing, but you got all sorts of ash and soot and some harmful materials and chemicals floating around. It's just not safe to live there. So they assign you an adjuster. Let's walk through this. Let's figure out the level of damage. You start looking at the roof. You start looking at your mechanicals. You start inspecting on the interior of your home. Is there lead? What's the problem here? Is there asbestos? Who knows? And then you get down the path, and State Farm says, we've got a new adjuster for you. We're going to pull this guy off, assign a new person, and then you have to start over again.
Yes.
So you got some notes and materials, but you're kind of starting from scratch. That's been State Farm's way, according to Caitlin, and why they've been on so many different adjusters and why they are a year removed from their home.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. This is going on, and you feel like you're probably getting closer to the end, and then only to find out you got to start all the way over when they give you a new adjuster. And another problem, I'm sure Caitlin and some other point may have talked about, but there's a lot of people that's coming in and buying all of that land up because they know it's going to be rebuilt and it's going to be premium land once again. So you may not be able to even get your own house, your own property back, because after they clear everything out, someone else can come in and buy that land.
It's a crazy situation out there. And I'd ask Caitlin if she had seen development in her area, the homes that were damaged or leveled. And she said yes. And it got to the point, I had asked her, and she kind of paused before answering. I said, would it have been better if your house was completely demolished? And because other homes are being built.
Yes,
it's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
But that's the situation. She does see a light at the end of the tunnel here, however.
We're very homesick to move home. You know, we're making plans to do so. My son is very antsy to get back home. We have requested another lease extension. So at this point, we're looking at probably March moving back in. We were hopeful for January. We were hoping to be back for the one-year anniversary. We will definitely live in that home again. It's taking a while, and that's my biggest hope, is that this investigation process will light a little bit of a spark under the insurance company that we need to move forward, because at this point they're wasting a lot of money on additional living expense rent as well.
Yeah, so that's what they're dealing with out in California. Specifically, Caitlin Morrell and her family have been bouncing around to different Airbnbs, trying to get their son back to school and sporting events and, you know, just living a normal life. But she does believe maybe by the end of Q1 of 2026, they'll get back into their home. Roughly 13 months removed. 14 months, maybe.
I'm hopeful that Caitlin and her family are able to get back in there, because that is a long time to be displaced and not knowing what's going to happen each month. Next month, it may be something different, or you may be assigned something else, and you don't know if these funds are going to run out, and why is it taking so long for State Farm to figure out what they want to do and how they're going to assess it. And so, but when you're at the mercy of their decisions and their timeline, there's really not much you can do.
Yeah, and Caitlin's done a great job keeping track of everything. Everything.
And so, you have to in this situation, especially really if smart. It ends up going into a legal battle of some sorts. You have all the receipts. So she's doing the right thing.
Yeah. So we'll keep following that. We'll check in with Caitlin sometime in January to see how progress is being made out in her area. 1255, call it 1256 here on WTMJ.